Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of Responsive Design Weekly Podcast. My name is Justin Avery. I am your host and the curator of the Responsive Design Weekly newsletter. This week is episode number 55, which is pretty cool, and I'm just going to kind of jump straight into it this week. We're just going to preview a couple of the links that we have from the newsletter this week. One, we're looking at a feature site from a digital agency called Weight Shift, which do some amazing work. Definitely go and check them out, weightshift.com, and I'll talk about that in a little while as well. A beautiful site, and I'll just talk about one little thing that I think they could possibly do to make it just super sweet. We're also going to talk about the new 10K Apart competition that is going on as well. We're looking at some pattern library stuff, how web pages are made up from these days, or what they're made up from these days, and a couple of other things as well, which we will get to. Before I do get to all those as well, I just want a quick shout out for our amazing sponsor, MobX Conference. You can go and see them at mobxcon.com. The link will be in the show notes as well. Conference coming up is on September 9th. It's a Friday, and it's in Berlin. So for anyone listening in the UK or in Germany, or in all of Europe, really. If you're in the UK, you better book your tickets and go this year, because who knows what will happen when Brexit comes in. It's fine. People will still be able to go. But they've got some amazing stuff. The topics this year, they're going to be on real-world responsive web design projects, something which I love, conversational interfaces, chatbots, the Internet of Things. It's going to be amazing. And we just want to say thank you for sponsoring. Yeah, it is a great conference. I went along last year. Definitely go along. If you use the code RWD podcast, it's good for €60 off your ticket. So if you're going, definitely use RWD podcast and save €60 off your ticket as well. So let's have a look at Weight Shift. So Weight Shift is this amazing, beautiful site. They're a great digital agency, or design agency, I suppose. And they've done, so they did the Typekit site. They've done some other Adobe stuff. Let me scroll through their site a little bit. The Zero Tax Touch app, about.me, they designed that. Oh, look, they did a little bit of Twitter stuff. The Outpost Games, I'm just scrolling through their site, adobe.com. Don't know if you've heard of Adobe, kind of a big thing. They did some work for radio. So they've done some awesome stuff. And so, check out their site. But the homepage is kind of done in sections. So each section has a very solid colored background to it, and it has an image of what they did for them inside of a device. So for the Zero Tax Touch, it shows the app on a white and a black iPhone. For the about.me, it shows an iPhone laying down. For Outpost, it's an iPad tilted to the side. And of course, you can see the website in the device Chrome. Now, this looks great, and they've got a shadow on it as well, and it really stands out. Think when you look at Apple products, when you go to the Apple site and you see their product shots, they really stand out. They're beautifully done. This is very, very similar. Now, the images themselves are loaded in as transparent PNGs because we need to use PNGs to get the transparency, which is great, but traditionally, PNGs are quite heavy unless they're sort of vector-based. So if it's a raster image with like shadings and like a photograph, basically, the PNG will be a lot heavier, a lot bigger, bigger file size, takes longer to download, the page weight goes up. But that's the trade-off. If you want transparency in your images so that you can see through and you can see the background, then that's what you have to do. But no more. So there's a WebP image format, which is a Google-based format, but it's been picked up by quite a few people. And there are some online converters. So you upload your JPEG or upload your PNG, and it will kick out a WebP version. There's plugins for Photoshop, Sketch. So any, there's also plugins for GIMP. So any image manipulation software that you might be using, there should be a plugin for WebP that you can spit those out as assets. Now, the great thing with WebP is that it has the compression benefits of JPEG even better, but it also allows for the transparency like PNG does. So it has a win-win situation. The only issue is that it doesn't have as great support across all of the different browsers as you would expect from an image format. So PNG and JPEGs, they have global support, whereas WebP only have support for, let's have a look at can I use, but it would probably be about 50% of the browsers. Let's have a look, WebP, or not even 50. So all of Chrome, Opera Mini Android browser, and Chrome for Android. iOS, Safari don't support it. Safari doesn't support it. Firefox doesn't support it. Edge and IE do not support WebP. Hopefully it will be there sometime in the future. But with the amazing picture element, we can specify different types of images. So we can say, okay, I want to put a picture in here. One source will be WebP, and then you can have all your source set rules, and another source will be JPEG, and another source might be PNG. So picture's not just for art direction, it can also be for file type as well. So what I would advise, if you're doing the transparency kind of thing, then you could put in one set of source using WebP, and another set of source using PNG. So all of the browsers that do support WebP will get a lighter version and therefore a smaller page and a faster page, and those that don't will get the same experience that they had before. So aside like that, I'm being really picky with this because it is a technique that not that many people are doing, and it is quite cool. But otherwise, like, I love their site. It's very, very cool. The other thing that's happening this week, or happened on Monday, just gone past, is that Alista Parr and Microsoft have joined teams. They've created a website called A-K-Apart, but for you, you should just Google 10K Apart. And this is a competition for everyone on the web, and the idea is they want you to create a compelling web experience that can be delivered within 10 kilobytes, and it must work without JavaScript. So they've got a couple of different examples. In fact, the 10K site itself, a-k-apart.com, is built within that limitation as well. Now, you can pull in additional resources as well, should you need, so you can lazy load them in or synchronously load those in, same kind of thing. But the core functionality has to work within 10K, and it has to work without JavaScript. So it's very, very cool. They've got prizes, there's money involved. I'm going to try and rebuild the ami.responsive site. So the one where you put your URL in and it shows you the website and different devices. So those devices are using, ironically, transparent PNGs at the moment. And I can't convert them to WebP because it's a background image thing that I'm using in CSS. However, I'm going to convert those to SVGs and try and keep them under the 10K mark. So I'm actually looking for some device Chrome SVGs. If anyone knows of any, please shoot me an email or a Twitter. Mention me at Justin Avery and let me know if you know of any cool ones. That'd be super helpful. This week, Brad Frost also talks about pattern libraries. And so we have these pattern libraries where he has this approach called atomic design. So you build up atoms together, they merge together, and they form larger and larger components, or they form molecules, which form organisms, which form pages, which form sites. And one of the deliverables we often have with websites is a style guide, which is different from the pattern library itself. So what he says, technically a pattern library is a simple collection of UI components, but in order for a design system users to do their best work, a pattern library should also present other information, other important information. And so he has a look at what information you need to supply against each pattern to make sure that it becomes a design system, something useful for people moving forward. It's a really, really good post. And I'm glad he started writing again. Now that he's finished the Atomic Design book, I'm sure he's going to start coming out with more and more awesome stuff again. They also, in another post, a company looks at they look at 8 million websites that were indexed, and they go into the details and have a look at the semantic markup that's been used across those 8 million. And there's some really cool stuff. So the HTML tag and the head tag used 100% across every website, as you would expect. But the body tag and title tag were only used 99% and 97% of the time, respectively, which is super weird. Who doesn't put a body tag in? Who doesn't put a title tag in? And header threes ended up being the most common heading element. But there's a whole bunch of stuff. They look at what are the most popular items in the head, like is it meta, is it link, and there's some just really interesting stuff of what we're actually using, and it kind of goes to show that we really do still use a lot of divs. That ranks probably the highest amongst everything. So what else have we got? There was one more thing that I really wanted to mention as part of this, which was a tutorial which was done by Tim Brown, who works over at Typekit. He does some amazing stuff. Everything that Typekit are doing, anything that's kind of pushing the web forward around typography, line heights, molten leading, it sort of resonates or starts with Tim. He does some great stuff. And so this time what he's done is he's written a tutorial which shows us that by using calc in CSS and having an idea about min and maximum widths that you might choose. So you would choose a minimum line length for your paragraph text, and you would choose a maximum line length for your paragraph text, and you would set your line height and your font size based on what looks best, but at the minimum and at the maximum. But then what happens when you're in between that bit? So what happens if you're not quite maximum or you're not quite minimum? There's lots of different viewports that resonate between those two periods. And for that, we then need to be able to set the font size and the line height as a calculation of how far along the viewport scale between those two points are to keep everything in this lovely vertical rhythm. Anyway, he's found a way because he's super smart, and he's written a tutorial on that. It breaks it down. It is really simple. It's not as difficult as I may have made it out to sound. So definitely check that out. Flexible typography with CSS locks. So that's the other thing that I wanted to talk about as well. And one last thing. I'll chuck one more in there then, which is an article by Jen Simmons on the Mozilla DevHacks site. And she talks about using feature queries within CSS. So at the moment, we might use something called Modernizer, which is a JavaScript plugin or a JavaScript file that we'll include. And what it does is it looks at the current capabilities of the device or the browser that you're using, and it will put those notes into a class in the head, the HTML or the body tag. And that way you can do checking. So you might say you look to see if Flexbox is being used or is capable, and so the Flexbox class will be in the HTML tag. So then when you're writing your CSS, you will look for that class or define that class for anything with Flexbox. You might do it to look for devices that support touch as well, and design things a little bit differently. Now, that's using JavaScript, but there's now, there has been for a little while, and it is gaining traction. So again, I'm just going to go back to can I use and just type in supports. So it's got some great traction at the moment. So we've got Edge Firefox, Chrome, Safari as of 9.1, Opera, iOS Safari as of 9.3, Android and Chrome for Android. So the only ones not supporting it are Opera Mini and IE 11 and Safari 8 and earlier and Safari 7.1. So this at supports will allow us to say, does this support... what was the example that she used? It was a really good example, better than one I was going to use. There is a capability where just say you want the first letter of a paragraph to occupy three lines. So remember when you used to read bedtime stories or lovely novels, children's novels, where the first character, so the T for the, it would occupy three lines and be beautifully designed, and then the rest of the paragraph would flow. Well, there is a CSS capability for that, and it's called initial letter. All right, and then you can say initial dash letter colon four, which means make that letter occupy four lines. And then there's a WebKit prefix for it, which is dash WebKit. And then you style around that as well. So you make the color different, you make the font different, you make the font weight a bit different, you change the margin for it perhaps. But then if the initial letter isn't supported, then you're still left with this sort of crappy, well, not crappy, but you're still left with the color and the font weight changes, but it doesn't size properly. Right? So it's a bit nasty. Now, what you can do instead is do at supports, and then you include the rule that you want. So at supports initial letter colon four. All right. Now, if it supports it, so then you do your curly braces. This is like a media query. So at supports initial letter four, curly braces, and then you put the style that you want. So then you say color it this color, make it font bold, make the margin right, but it's all wrapped within the at supports declaration. So then if it doesn't support it, it doesn't get those styles applied, and then you just have a regular paragraph. So this is super great. So it means you don't need JavaScript, you might not need Modernizer for CSS rules, and it is reasonably well supported now. Like this is really, really good stuff. But yeah, so there's even more. Like there are a couple of things. There's a whole bunch more in the newsletter this week. But there's some things. Those links will be in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening this week. I hope you got a little bit out of that. Next week we'll be back again. It'll be episode number 56. In the meantime, if you have any questions, you can follow me at reswebdes. So R-E-S. WEBDES, that's a responsive design, responsive web design Twitter account, or you can reach me at justin@responsivedesign.is. If you like the podcast, it'd be great if you leave a review in iTunes and mark it up the full 5 stars. That would be awesome. But until next week, thank you very much for listening, and I will talk to you then. Cheers for that. Bye.